the thrill is gone away.
Good morning, everyone. It is Wednesday, August 2nd, 2017. The Packers have an off day today, and we will have a chance to speak to the coaches later for the first time, the assistant coaches. We have defensive coaches. And so on tomorrow's podcast, Thursday morning, we'll be sure to catch you up on everything that the defensive coaches have to say, along with special teams coordinator Ron Zook. And I think we also get offensive coordinator Edgar Bennett. This is the Packers podcast. My name is Michael Cohen. And as I mentioned the other day, there was going to be a little bit of a surprise this week. And I don't know if you would believe me, but Tom Silverstein is sitting here right now. I know some of you have been pining for a co-host or a guest. Tom, they've wanted you for a while now. He of the Live Blog is here.
Yeah, well, you know, I like to just make a drop-in appearance every once in a while. Just kind of show up. You know, and I like a lot of anticipation before I come, you know, so that the crowd just, the audience we have behind us, thousands here watching, you know, will enjoy it. So well, here I am.
We're glad to have you here, and hopefully you guys enjoy having a guest on. So those of you who are sick of my voice after 20 minutes a day for the last week, have somebody else to listen to. And right off the bat, we'll catch you up on some injury news. Mike McCarthy basically started his press conference yesterday by saying that rookie defensive lineman Montrevious Adams will need surgery on his foot. Now, Tom, I know you talked to a couple guys along the defensive line about him, and I mentioned your story on the podcast yesterday, but is this maybe more of a significant setback than we might have thought for a guy that's coming in from the third round?
Yeah, I think it is. Based on what the veteran players were telling me yesterday, I didn't realize that he had come so far or had flashed as much talent as he had. And then the whole thing changes because, you know, I don't almost never expect rookie defensive linemen to have any kind of success. You know, you saw what happened with Kenny Clark. They played him a ton in training camp last year, played it as much as possible during the year, and he really didn't have an impact until late in the year. I figured the same would be true with Adams, but apparently from what these guys were saying, his pass rush is so good that they were expecting him to contribute right away. So it's a big blow because, you know, anytime you get a pass rusher, you got to get him on the field, and that is going to be a question mark for them.
An interior pass rush is an area where they could probably use a little bit of juice because last year, you know, you had Mike Daniels and Guyon for the majority of the season, and, you know, neither of those guys generated a ton of pass rush, and mm-hmm. So this would probably be a welcome addition for Mike Turgovec.
Yeah, and not to mention, you know, on third downs, when you can run Clay Matthews off him up the middle, even Perry, they've done that. You know, you can start, if a guy can make some penetration, that opens up so much because it forces another lineman to, you know, react. And then, you know, you work your other pass rusher off him. So, yeah, that's going to be interesting to see how long it takes for him to come back. But you have to say, you know, if it's a six-week injury, then you got to add another 4 weeks for how long it'll take him before he's really back in football condition.
So you're talking about maybe end of September, early October, before he's able to do a whole lot. And then at that point, the coaches would have to trust him enough to put him out there.
Yeah. What you would see was just gradual. You know, as soon as he came back, he'd probably practice for a week, maybe 2 weeks before they played him, and then you just see him gradually be worked in. But, you know, he's not going to be working on his hand placement. He's not going to be working on his footwork, recognition of plays, things like that. It's a setback for them.
Do you think Dean Lowry is a guy that will be counted on to sort of fill some of that pass rushing role, which isn't necessarily what he did a lot of last year?
Yeah, we've seen a lot of him inside in practice this past week or so, and he does seem to be, he has a little slippery factor to him that you saw a little bit last year. I think he needed to add a little bit of strength and let his body sort of mature. We've seen that a little bit here, and I'm kind of interested to see how he does inside. Rushing inside's new to him, so that's going to be something he'll have to continue to get better at, but I think they are counting on him quite a bit.
Yeah, and I think that the strength factor is something that's showed up in a couple different areas so far with him. You know, I think he's looked pretty solid in some of the one-on-one pass rush drills. He's been able to push guys a little bit and not necessarily get shoved wide or shoved inside the way he might have last year. And then in the half-line drill, which is something I talked about the other day, that real physical run game drill, I think he's looked pretty good disrupting guys, trying to cut in and slice down some running backs. So, you know, Lowry's a guy, and I think, what was the quote from McCarthy the other day? He thinks that Lowry could be at the top of the class in terms of guys that are going to make a second-year jump. Mm-hmm. And so that's, that's some pretty high praise to put on a guy. And oftentimes you'll see McCarthy or some of the other coaches try and temper their expectations of guys. So I think that's a pretty good sign there. The other little piece of injury news was that Kevin King, the first overall pick, but actually a second-round pick, did not practice on Tuesday with a shoulder injury. He was out there watching the guys, seemed to be in good spirits. It doesn't seem like anything too significant, does it?
No, I'm going to guess that he's back by Thursday. I don't know that for sure, but he was even taking part in the stretching and the warm-up drills. And so, I mean, it didn't look like he was a guy who had anything serious. I'm sure it was precautionary, and I would guess that it's probably only a couple-day injury.
Now, ever since really the spring, we've talked about how if the coaches want to, they have the ability to rotate a lot of these guys in the secondary because, first of all, they need to figure out who can play where in terms of ability, and then second of all, how that depth chart will shake out. And So what have you seen from King over the last couple of days in terms of where the coaches have been using him the most?
It's pretty typical from what I've seen, and it's sort of how they started Sam Shields. This is how what it reminds me of was that they just put him at an outside position in the nickel. And so he comes in in the nickel defense, five defensive backs, three cornerbacks, and they put, right now it would be Quentin Rollins, into the slot, and King just plays that right side. That's what they did when they had Tremont Williams, Charles Woodson, and Shields in 2010. Woodson and Tremont Williams were the starters, and then Shields was a rookie, and they put him in at nickel on the outside. That's the role I see for Kevin King.
And so for a guy that missed, you know, a significant portion of OTAs and things like that, he was just starting to really get his feet under him. If this is a minor injury, it shouldn't be a problem. But in the meantime, it looked like Demaryius Randle took some of those snaps today. How does Demaryius Randle sort of fit into this? Because if you go back to his rookie year, he was the guy that was playing the majority of snaps while Rollins sort of came along slowly. But has that flipped at all, do you think, in terms of where he stands right now?
Yeah, it has flipped. Quentin Rollins is definitely ahead of him. But where Demaryius Randle is going to make up ground is in games when he makes plays, if he's the kind of guy who's around the ball a lot. We've seen him make interceptions, pretty impressive interceptions. That's where he's going to be probably be able to turn the tide, if he does at all. Otherwise, you know, Rollins, we still have to see. You know, we've seen him get beat a lot last year. He was injured. So far this year, he's been pretty good and pretty solid. But this thing, you know, is not decided in any form. I mean, they've got four preseason games to go, and a lot can happen. But it just is, what it tells you is that Rollins has had a really solid offseason, and enough that they said, okay, he's our starter along with Devon House.
The point you mentioned about Randle, I think, is a really good one, because I remember you and I having discussions last year and even 2 years ago where we said, even as a rookie, Randle might have the best ball skills of any of the cornerbacks. And so if he is the one that's able to actually go up and catch the ball and make plays, you know, that can probably be a pretty significant plus in his column, because as many of you saw last year, Ladarius Gunter struggled to catch the ball at every opportunity.
Missed one today. Yeah. Missed a sure interception. I mean, it went right through his hands. You know?
Rollins has had times where he's struggled to get his hands on the ball. And so, you know, with the exception of Demaryius Randle, Micah Hyde was probably the most skilled ball handler they had, if you want to call it that. And so that's going to be pretty interesting to see. And in terms of Rollins, the one thing I'm really interested to watch is tackling as well. You know, this is a guy that at times has either broken tackles on him, or there's even been times where I think there's a little bit of timidity there, and he's not sure what he wants to do yet. And don't forget, this is a guy that is still only a handful of years really into high level football. You know, he only played, what was it, one season of college football. So this is still a learning curve for him that will be pretty interesting to see. One of the things that you spoke about today earlier when we were just sort of talking about things that came out of the locker room was, you know, guys trying to figure out a way to defend Martellus Bennett. I mean, when you look at him, he looks like he could probably play right tackle, and he wouldn't look so out of place in terms of his physical stature. And then you look at the guys having to cover them, mostly the safeties, and, you know, guys like Morgan Burnett and Kentrell Bryce, huge size disadvantages. And you spoke to Morgan Burnett about that today. What are the challenges, really, that those guys face in trying to defend this monster?
Well, I looked it up, so... Morgan Burnett gives up 5 inches and 66 pounds to that guy. You know, I mean, really, that is like going up against a tackle. He is an impressive athlete, and the more I watch him, I wonder why his production wasn't even more in New England. It could have been. I'm sure it's just because they spread the ball around so much. They do a spread attack, and I could really see him becoming a safety valve for Rodgers, especially on the scramble drills, because all he's got to do is throw it up there. And it's hard to defend him. Burnett, you know, he didn't really have a secret for doing it. From what I've seen, he's tried to use his length and his speed. You know, Bennett is not like Jared Cook. He's not a down-the-field speed guy. He's shifty. He's great after the catch. He's a load to bring down. And I think the key is trying to mirror him the whole way and not let him use his body to kind of box you out.
And Burnett did have one nice pass breakup against Bennett at the goal line today, and I can't remember if it was a two-minute drill, but there was a throw that probably came from somewhere around the 15-yard line and ended up down near the goal line. And Burnett was—I couldn't see if he actually got his hand on the ball, but either way, he was glued to Bennett and disrupted him. And I just remember two practices ago during one of the quote-unquote TV timeouts where the players get water and chill out for a minute, Bennett was talking to Kentrell Bryce, and Bryce is even shorter than Burnett, and Bryce has been matched up on him a couple times too, so it's really interesting to see. One of the things that I wondered about with Bennett is I think that McCarthy's made it pretty clear that they want to use him a lot in the run game as a blocker. Do you think that there's going to come a point in time where they have to balance the injury risk of using him as a blocker with the benefits of him as a receiver, or can they throw him out there as much as they want and not really be too concerned about him as a blocker?
Yeah, no, I don't think that's a concern. I don't think, I mean, yes, you're susceptible to guys rolling up on your legs and things like that, but I don't think that, I think they really want to use him in line. I don't think they've had a guy who can line up there and block and go out for a pass. That's going to be huge for this offense if he stays healthy and if he produces. One other play you were mentioning about him, and I had a great vantage point to this play today. And so Rodgers was rolling out, and Burnett was draped all over Bennett, and they were coming towards the sideline, and Rodgers kind of looked away, and Bennett gave a little turn like he was done with the play, and Burnett just sort of gave up. Just looked, you know, upfield a little bit because he thought maybe he'd go help somewhere. Bennett turns really fast. Rodgers, no looks, throws it right at the sideline. He keeps both feet in. They get a first down. That was, to me, like two veterans understanding the game and working a guy. And that's the kind of thing you're going to have to see, or you'll probably see from Bennett.
Now, of all the guys that you've covered over the years, who have been some of the better blocking and receiving tight end combos? Or maybe just start with the guys that were really good blocking tight ends, and then you can sort of discuss, you know, which guys had anything to offer in the receiving game.
The best blocking tight end that I've ever covered was Ed West, and this goes back to the 80s, late 80s. They used to call him Velcro because he would get his hands on you inside, and you could not, once he got him on you, you were done. He would just pull you along or push you along. He was the toolbox, they called him. That was his nickname, but the coaches called him Velcro because you couldn't get off him.
Could he give you anything in the passing game?
He was okay.
Okay.
He was okay. He was a big guy. He ran pretty well. He was a very solid tight end and was a starter for quite a while.
Do any combo guys come to mind? Any guys that are really good blockers that also offer something significant in the passing game? It's a rare skill set to have.
It is. It really is. You know, not since like Chimura and Keith Jackson have the Packers really had a tight end that can do both. Finley gave it his best. I'll say one thing about him. He wasn't a classic blocker, but he didn't shy away from contact, and he was willing to stick his nose in there. It's just that he wasn't built for it, you know?
Well, that's one of the things that Bob and I talked about a couple times on the podcast, even with Jared Cook. There were very few times where Cook completely turned down, you know, blocking assignments. It's not that he was unwilling. He just wasn't good at it.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, there's nothing you can do. You can try as hard as you want, but if you don't have the base and the ability to anchor the way you need to, you're going to lose. And so it's not as if Cook wasn't trying. And even Richard Rodgers, I don't think he turns down a lot of blocks either. He's just not good at it.
He's just a terrible blocker.
Yeah.
I've not seen a tight end that bad at blocking. And he just, for whatever reason, he's got the body for it. You know, he's wide base. Maybe, you know, it could be just that he doesn't move his feet fast enough. But
It's going to be interesting to see. And one of the things that stands out to me about Bennett, too, is that when you see him run in the open field and break tackles on guys, and when you see him sort of have the ability to box out players along the sideline or even over the middle, he's just so big. A lot of that, I think, is what fans were hoping they would see from a guy like Richard Rodgers, who has these massive legs, you know, the ability to catch a ball in the flat and maybe break a tackle, or the ability to use, and Richard Rodgers was a terrific high school basketball player, so, you know, that ability to box guys out, I think. So Bennett, of course, has a height advantage, but I think a lot of the skills that Bennett offers are things that fans were hoping Richard Rodgers might have.
Yeah, and he doesn't have it. They get him down very easily. Bennett, I've been told, watch his stiff arm. Once they get into the games, that his stiff arm is pretty devastating. So I'm interested to see that.
Now, one of the things we wanted to add in today to this podcast was a sort of a player of the day type feature. And we just talked about a great blocker in Bennett. And I think your choice is also going to be a guy who does a lot of blocking. Who stood out to you today?
Today, and this has been pretty consistent, but Lane Taylor, the left guard, is really kind of coming on. I think last year he had to step in for Josh Sitton, and that was no easy task. And, you know, he was solid, but there were still moments where he could have been a lot better. And I think he's picked up a lot of confidence. Looks like he picked up a little strength. And he's just eaten Mike Daniels' lunch. You know, he's stymied him four times.
He's put him into the ground twice.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, Daniels just bull rushes. You know, that's what he's going to do. And Taylor's been really good at fending that off. He could probably be better at speed, but the bull rush is what you're going to see the most on the inside. And if you can handle Daniels' bull rush, then you can pretty much handle anybody.
Yeah, it's been impressive to watch. And I'm going to stick actually with somebody on offense. I thought Ty Montgomery had a really good day of practice today for a couple different reasons. First, the Packers did this drill that was one-on-one receiving with running backs against linebackers. So a running back would come out and run a pattern, and the linebacker would have to defend him, and there'd be nobody else on the field. And Montgomery just showed basically what McCarthy has talked about in terms of matchups, how teams are going to have to decide how they want to treat him. Do they want to treat him as a running back, and so you would put a linebacker-type body on that guy? Or do they want to treat him as a receiver, and then maybe he's going to be covered more by a safety? Mm-hmm. And we just saw that when he's matched up with these linebackers, the quickness advantage is just sizable. I mean, he did sort of this subtle change of pace move against Jake Ryan that left Jake Ryan like 6 yards behind him. And it was an easy catch over the top. Mm-hmm. And then you talked about it the other day in one of your stories about how this first team offensive line, when Montgomery and even Jamal Williams are running behind them, it's been pretty impressive. And Montgomery in particular, I thought, had a few runs where he's able to kind of almost turn diagonally in the hole and squeeze through the line of scrimmage and pick up steam again really quickly. So I actually thought he had a pretty solid day.
Yeah, his whole, in my opinion, what'll make or break him is his timing and knowing when to make his cut and figuring out how the blocking combinations, you know, when the cutback lane is going to show up. You know, Eddie Lacy was really good at that. He was really good at patient, and you never saw him hurry up to the hole. It was always wait, and then explode. And that's kind of what Montgomery's going to have to learn.
And so this morning, or yesterday morning rather, was the end of the 8:15 practices. So we don't have to wake up at 6 a.m. anymore.
Yeah, that's a double-edged sword for us. And we only care about us. You know, it's not really about the football team. It's about us. Is that, you know, we get here we are, we're done with our writing, and we're doing, you know, there's a podcast. And, you know, by the end of the 5 o'clock, we're done. You know, that never happens. During the season, we're here till 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
But, you know, you also have to get up at 6 a.m. So.
And so what is the thought process that McCarthy laid out today about the different practice times? They really have three waves. They have this early morning. They have this evening practice, which starts up Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And then they have their midday, which rotates between, I think it's 11:45 and 12:15. Mm-hmm. So what is the thought behind the different waves?
Well, so McCarthy's wants the morning practice. I'm not really sure why they do the morning practice. I think it's just tradition, and that's how they used to always do it. But then he wants to practice night games. So they're going to have, what is it, four practices, four night practices?
I think it's three straight, three Thursday, straight. Friday, Saturday.
Yeah. And then, so that prepares them for the Monday night games, the Thursday night games. It teaches, you know, the younger guys what it's like to be around all day. Then they go to 11:45 a.m., pretty much the rest of the preseason. And that's their in-season schedule. So now they're getting into how a normal day would be during the season. It's kind of early to do that. I'm not really sure why he wants to get into that regular season right away, but he does, and he's just a guy of routine. So I think that's probably the reason.
Yeah, so for those of you who have been coming out in the morning, we'll now see you in the evenings starting Thursday, and then the beginning of next week, it shifts to the middle of the day. So
yeah.
I think that means, what, more sick days being used here in Green Bay,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I know it's way past my bedtime, so I'll have a hard time staying up for these practices.
The night practices are tough, and then the next morning I'm sure there'll be some people calling in sick because they were out too late the night before. Well, Tom, it was great to have you on today's podcast. We'll have to get you on again soon, and
yeah.
The fans are happy you're here.
Yeah, I hope we can do this regularly during the season, and I know I'm not Bob McGinn, but who is, really? I mean, you know, is there anyone more entertaining than Bob?
Well, I spared you the classic Bob McGinn first podcast of asking you your height and weight, which you did for me the first time that
you.
I was on the podcast. So we don't have to worry about that.
Thank you. I might give you my 40 time, but you're not getting my height and weight, that's for sure.
All right. Well, we have overstayed our welcome for the Wednesday episode. We will see you guys again tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you soon.
I'm still